Good afternoon, everybody. On behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society, my name is Joe Boma, and I'm here with another edition of Grit City Stories. And once again, joining me, we have Mr. John Bufflin Haley, who, as you know, is on our very first episode. Mr. Haley, how are you doing today?
Really good.
It is great to have you back. I know last time we discussed the old family mansion. That was absolutely gorgeous, and we have the picture here again, just... Again, absolutely gorgeous Mediterranean home. But today we have something a little different, kind of tying into the aviation history of the Pacific Northwest. Your grandfather, on top of owning lumber mills and furniture mills and working architecture and so many other things for the city, apparently was part of the pioneering spirit of aviation in the early 1900s.
Yes, he was.
Well, I would love to hear more about these... literal first flights and the changing, I guess, history of transportation of the globe that he was involved in. You know, no small feat.
No, it wasn't. Well, I would say to start with, we gotta take ourselves back to the late 1920s, early 30s.
Okay, roaring 20s, great time, great music.
Well, it wasn't a great time. There was a big depression going on.
Yeah.
A lot of people were suffering around the country, well, around the world. So... there were a lot of problems going on.
Makes sense.
Fortunately, in the Pacific Northwest, it wasn't as bad. And one reason it wasn't as bad was the lumber industry. And as you mentioned, my grandfather was heavily involved in the lumber business here and accumulated quite a bit of wealth. Well, he got interested in aviation. He had a kind of an engineering background, design background, and he was always curious about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And he got really curious about aviation, where it was going.
He was a Renaissance man, so it seems like at that time, aviation was the new hot technology.
Oh, there were, I'll cover part of the stories, but there was a lot of adventure tied to aviation, more than there is now because we take it for granted. We hop on a plane from Tacoma and 6-8 hours later, we're in Japan. Everybody just expects that.
I feel everyone loses the majesty of we're flying at 35,000 feet at 500 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh.
Like it's incredible.
Yeah.
All right, I'll let you get back to the historic stories there, not my own childhood whimsy.
Anyway, my grandfather got interested in aviation, and who knows how, but he decided he was going to help sponsor a young pilot called Harold Bromley, I think it was.
Bromley.
And he was actually quite famous. He was did circus acts and things and mail deliveries and he had quite a name as far as being a very good pilot.
So he was an old barnstormer type from like the old Astros.
That's the term.
Okay,
you got it.
Awesome.
Hey, he somehow got with my grandfather. The two of them got together and they decided they were going to try the first flight, nonstop flight across the Pacific Ocean.
Wow!
A few years earlier, the Spirit of St. Louis did it for St. Louis, and my grandfather, who was always trying to promote lumber and Tacoma, decided, why not let us try it here, and we'll fly from Tacoma all the way to Japan, and we'll call it the City of Tacoma, and it'll get lots of publicity. So the two of them got together, and they started working on this project. Well, Bromley got with Lockheed down in Burbank, California, and they had come out with a new aircraft. It was called the Vega monoplane. Monoplane means one wing.
Yeah, so that was big news back in the day. One wing.
this airplane was advanced for its design and everything at the time in late 1920s. The riveting on it was very smooth. Everything about the plane was very smooth for less resistance. So it was quite modern. So Bromley decided that's what he was going to try to do the flight in. And grandfather paid to have the plane brought up here to Tacoma. And the two of them got together and they decided that they were going to build a ramp for the aircraft to take off with because fuel was the major concern. 4,764 miles across. And how much fuel can the plane hold?
Especially with the technology of the day.
Well, they were lucky with the Vega monoplane because they, of course, could get fuel in the wings, and that was good, but also the fuselage. It was a very long fuselage. It was, I think, like a 400, 500 horsepower engine, and that was it. Between the engine and the rudder, there was just one small cockpit, and everything else in the fuselage was available to carry fuel.
And looking at the photos of the plane there, it looks like it was an open cockpit to boot to save weight, I guess.
Well, it had a little windshield.
Yeah.
When I saw that, I thought, how could somebody, they figured the flight would have taken him 45 hours to have flown, and he would have been all by himself, seated in, I wonder if he had seat belts.
Say, probably got to save weight across the ocean. Like, that's right. Don't need a full windshield, no parachute, no seatbelt. You'll be fine. You and a flying gas tank.
That's amazing. Like you say, no full windshield. It was open. And anyway, so they put a lot of fuel in the fuselage and they built the ramp. And the intent of the ramp was to allow it to get the engine warmed up and get it up to full RPM so that it could take off downhill. And when it got to the bottom, then it would proceed to take off to the air, and it would be less fuel to do that than run all the way down the runway. Not only that, they could eject the wheels because they didn't figure they needed wheels on the plane because they were going to crash land in Japan somewhere. You know, you could just crash on a beach or somewhere like that. That's not a real problem. You break a propeller or so.
Glad that was their solid plan from the start. Like, oh, we'll save more weight by planning to crash at the end.
Aren't you glad they don't do that now? But
it does make traveling a bit better, yes.
Again, it was the weight factor.
Yeah.
Very important. They gathered at Tacoma Field, which is now McCord, and thousands of people showed up for this. And you've seen the pictures. All kinds of cars out there and thousands of people. And it was an enormous ceremony. And my mother, who was 9 years old at the time, they publicized her picture up on the wing, and she looked gorgeous, you know, curls in her hair and everything, dressed to the nines, as they say.
Yep.
And a young Japanese girl in a kimono right next to her, symbolizing United States flying to Japan.
Yep.
And Bromley was there, and of course, my grandfather, and then, like I said, thousands of people. So what a beautiful ceremony. And they have the plane up on the ramp now. They have it tied, tied down so that they can get the RPMs up and the engines warmed up and it's ready to go. And they release the ropes to let the plane go down this wonderful ramp. And the ramp, I mentioned to you earlier, I was really surprised when I got a close look at the ramp.
Yep.
When you figure out the weight of that plane with all the fuel on it,
They
must have used a lot of Buffalo lumber.
Yep.
But it looked like most of the frame was 6x6. Lumber to hold that plane.
So your grandfather basically used wood that was made for massive ships and you know, housing just to build a launch ramp for a plane.
Oh, you bet.
The engineering is amazing.
So the plane takes off. They let go of the ropes and the plane takes off, goes down the ramp, gets to the bottom of the ramp, and then he starts climbing right away. Yeah. Well, I don't know if somebody forgot to put the gas cap on or not.
Oh, no.
But the fuel, the aviation fuel, proceeded to flow out of the fuselage in towards the cockpit.
The open cockpit, as we previously described.
It's a good thing it was open. I don't know. And it blinded Bromley. And, of course, he couldn't see what he was doing. The tip of the wing bent over, leaned over, and hit the ground. And it was a total crash.
I'm just glad with that much fuel it didn't explode immediately.
Well, the picture shows the plane there.
Yeah.
What an embarrassment. I couldn't believe it when I saw that plane, how horrible that must have been. What was the term you used? How sad it was?
Oh, it's such a tragedy, but like...
Tragedy. It must have been. I bet my grandfather really... Yeah. Oh. And Bromley, he walked away from it, no problem.
Yeah, so look, just the size of the ramp, the plane, the fuel, just
a lot of
the
work.
Crash, like that is... Honestly, I'm impressed that he survived the crash, and that plane was pretty robust to survive the crash.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at the photo, that was some solid engineering.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I would probably be over with the story by now, but it's not, because they didn't quit.
Yeah. Oh,
They had the plane shipped back down to Burbank.
Yep.
And they rebuilt it.
Told them to put a new gas cap on, hopefully.
I didn't look for that. But they rebuilt the plane, and... In their testing, Lockheed tested the plane out. Mm-hmm. It crashed again.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. So Bromley now has to go back to grandfather and request more funds to rebuild the plane again.
Mm-hmm.
And there must have been other investors involved in this. I'm sure my grandfather was not the only one. But I'm sure he had other investors in there. I don't know who they would have been. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the two of them agreed to rebuild the plane a second time. Okay. And they got the plane rebuilt, and the story gets worse.
Oh, good.
It crashed a third time. Unfortunately, this time the pilot was killed.
Was this Bromley or?
No.
Okay.
It was a test pilot down at Lockheed.
So still unfortunate. I shouldn't be like, oh, it wasn't Bromley, was it?
No, it wasn't Bromley.
Still very unfortunate.
We're not over with yet. Yeah. Okay. Bromley and my grandfather, the two Bs, Bufflin and Bromley, they went after it again. They had the plane rebuilt.
A fourth time. Oh, wow.
Now, they had figured out that it would be better to try to fly the plane from Japan. They knew they had to change something. So they decided that using the trade winds would be more productive flying from Japan over here.
Makes sense.
That would mean less fuel, quicker flight time. They can catch the trade winds, and that would be a better way to do it.
Yep.
So Bromley and Bufflin shipped the plane to Japan. Mm-hmm. And let's see, this would have been in 1930. Oh, at the time, Bromley was doing stunt flight training and running mail and passengers between El Paso and Mexico City.
Oh, wow.
So he was still continued.
Yep.
And then Bromley flew over to Japan. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And there was something, Mojave Desert. I think that's where the plane crashed the third time and the pilot was killed. It was in the Mojave Desert.
So you got to give credit to the pioneers of flight, like, oh, the plane's already crashed four times and people have died. I'll keep trying.
He tried a third time. They're crazy. Yeah. Thank God a NASA space program was in that band.
Yeah.
In the meantime, apparently my grandfather decided to sue Lockheed and get some of the money back.
I can see that after the fourth rebuild.
Yeah, they were concerned about, is this plane really that good? And so he searched for another plane, a different one.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't tell Lockheed about it because of the insurance claim and everything that was going on. And he bought a fourth plane from a company called EMSCO. Now, I've never heard of that. EMSCO. EMSCO.
Mm-hmm.
And it was out of Los Angeles. And he had that delivered to Bromley in 1930. By this time, they figured out that single cockpit with the open windshield wasn't going to cut it. So they got a plane that was big enough to carry a navigator.
Good.
Yeah, let's see. The navigator was
Harold Gaddy
was hired to be the navigator, and he became famous. He navigated the first round world flight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was quite an accomplished navigator.
Yeah, definitely.
And so they had now this new plane to fly from Japan, 1930, and they took off. They got, I think it was about 400 miles,
mm-hmm.
and there was an exhaust leak.
Oh,
and it went into the cockpit and into the main part of the plane, and they could no longer fly. Boop, the trip was over. They couldn't continue.
So where did they set down after 400 miles? Did they turn back to Japan or Alaska?
Yeah, they were able to get it down safely. So it was okay. But, of course, by this time, they didn't have to return the plane to Burbank, Lockheed. So they did repair work on there.
Okay.
And by this time, Bromley said, I've had it. I've had it. This is too much.
Yeah.
And the then grandfather hired two new pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. One was named Boyle, and the other was named Allen. And they were both pilots. And it doesn't sound like either one of them had a lot of experience with navigation. Okay. So they loaded the plane up with chickens and food and stuff like this.
Yeah.
They didn't even have a radio. And they took off from the same place.
Yeah.
And nobody heard from them for a while. 2 days, nobody's heard from them. Nobody's seen them. There's ships out there supposed to be even watching for them. Nobody's heard from them. So they didn't know what
happened. Is this about to become a ghost story?
Huh?
Is this about to become a ghost story?
Well, kind of, not really. No, it turned out that they got into a storm, a really bad storm, and it took them off course.
Yeah.
They don't know how much, but they figured they had been flying in circles. Now, without the instrumentation we have nowadays, that would not be hard to do.
Exactly.
Especially it would be very large circles. We're not talking, you know, hundreds of yards. We're talking miles of circles. And they found an island, and they landed safely on the island. And it was deserted. Nobody on the island. No radio. Now they've used up a lot of fuel.
Yep.
They don't want to fly because of the bad weather. So they struggled for 3-4 days there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took off again. Now they've got a problem with not enough fuel to make the whole trip anymore.
Yeah.
So they fly to Siberia. That's in Russia.
Yep.
Okay. So they fly to Siberia, land the plane, and now everybody's happy because they hear that they're okay. Grandfather had sent out, well, Coast Guard and a lot of other ships were looking for him all along. And Grandfather apparently paid for part of the search efforts before they found out that they were safe in Siberia. And so it was all in the newspapers. They got the clippings from the newspapers. Pilots, two pilots lost in the Pacific. And so now they left Siberia, and somehow they ended up in the United States. I don't know if it was a state then. No, it wasn't a state then. They ended up in Nome.
Yes, it wasn't quite a state yet.
No, but, you know, I would think maybe a lot of other places, but why the hell way up in Nome? And so they did some maintenance up there because, again, they were running into bad weather. Who would think Nome in late September, early October would have bad weather? I've been to Nome.
I say Northern Alaska from Siberia. No, it's sunny and 60 every day. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. I flew into Nome one time, and I looked out, and I thought, Christopher Columbus is wrong. The world is flat, and this is the end of the world right here. But so they did maintenance work on the aircraft, and then they flew from Nome down to Fairbanks, and they landed there for more fuel again and had to do a little bit more maintenance on the aircraft. And then they went to Skagway, landed there, spent some time there.
Yeah.
And then on October, I think it was October 6th, they landed in Tacoma.
I mean, technically landed, across the Pacific.
They landed, believe it or not, at the wrong airport. Yeah.
To cap off the whole trip.
To cap off the whole trip. They landed at one, I think it's Clover Park now. But there was an airport out there, and that's where they landed. Oops. Hey, where are we at? You know, I think it's further down the road. And so they contacted Grandfather. My grandfather had never flown in a plane.
Really? Through all of this, he had never been in a plane once.
Right. Wow. So they contacted my grandfather, and they flew him from Clover Park to Tacoma Field, you know, 20 miles or whatever. But that was his first flight. Probably his only flight, I don't know. So that kind of is the end of the story. But you've heard a lot of ironic things.
Yeah.
Well, at about the same time, another pilot had a plane. His name was Pangborn.
Okay.
And he was the first successful flight nonstop across the Pacific Ocean. And he landed in Yakima on October 4th.
Oh, wow.
And he took off from basically the same place that Grandfather's last plane took off. Did I mention the change of names of the plane?
No, you didn't.
Oh, that was in this last plane when he bought the one from Pemsco Company.
Yep.
They couldn't use that name term City of Tacoma anymore because that was tied into the Lockheed stuff. So he renamed the plane the Klesina Madge. And that was my mother, Klesina Madge.
Okay.
And Klesina is a pretty name, but it's not uncommon. I have an aunt Klesina, I have a sister Klesina, and a niece Klesina. As far as Dutch people, it's a pretty common name. But anyway, that flight took them that total distance, and it went from September 8th all the way to October 6th, their first nonstop flight. Pangborn did it in 46 hours.
So if they could have flown straight.
Yeah.
Well,
and for a long time, I've sat back and wondered why. Why would anybody go through all this stuff? Of course, we can't put ourselves in those shoes at that time, but at least we can look at the creativity of humans, how they endeavor to go ahead. They know something. Grandfather knew something was really going to happen with that industry, and he was right.
Yeah,
Yeah, so, and so did Pangborn.
Was your grandfather, was he aware of Pangborn and that expedition? Was it like a friendly competition? Was there not a friendly competition?
I've never heard that, but there must have been something, because they took off from basically the same place that the Placina Madge took off from. And they used, that was the other thing that I've thought about, is how some people do great things and sometimes they fail.
Mm-hmm.
Other people pick up where they left off, the good parts.
Yep.
And that's what Pangborn did. They didn't try three unsuccessful flights across the ocean from Tacoma or Yakima over there. They tied on to what Grandfather and Bromley had already figured out. This would be a better way to do it. And that's what they tried. And they were successful.
Yeah, I mean, and it truly an age of engineering and technical exploration, and still general exploration. As you mentioned, Boyle and Allen landed on a deserted island.
Like, oh, yeah.
Do we know if we found out where that island ever was? Like, I don't know. There's so many islands in the Pacific they're still discovering.
As far as I know, nobody knows where it was. I wish they had a soccer ball with them. You know what I'm referring
Wilson.
To?
Wilson.
Tom Hanks movie?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and my wife and I have often thought about my grandmother all this time. I mean, they estimate that my grandfather probably dumped $1 million into this effort.
And is that like early 1900s $1 million?
Well, 1929.
Yeah, 1929.
1931. So, and how did grandma let him do this? You know,
the real questions, yes.
Yeah. So we were pretty surprised at that. I ended up doing a stint at flying for a while. Just got my solo, but and then I ended up working for the FAA. I retired from the FAA, and
there you go.
They even produced a little article in their newspaper, the national newspaper, about this tie-in that I had with aviation in my background. So it's been neat.
No, that's awesome that your family has this aviation legacy. I will say, my only experience flying, I have, you know, one powered flight hour, so that's pretty fun. And I almost tore the wings off a glider, so your family has done a lot better than I have. Yeah, it turns out when they say push the stick forward, they don't mean all the way forward. Long story short, we landed safely.
Oh, good. Anyone you get away, walk away from is a good landing.
Exactly. Definitely old pilot right there. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that awesome story of just Tacoma flight history. Kind of a shame that they couldn't land at SeaTac, but SeaTac didn't exist yet at that point.
I don't think so. I meant to look that up. I don't think so. My sister-in-law is here, and she was, do you remember if it was there at that time?
SeaTac came after that.
I know. My favorite anecdote to that is Seattle and Tacoma fighting over where they're going to build the new airport, and they both fight so hard, and then legislators come in and say, neither of you gets it. It's a whole separate town called SeaTac because you won't stop fighting.
Yeah.
Where they have lots of fog.
Yep. Oh, yes.
Well, not a good choice.
The FAA has always been amazed at how local communities, when they want to make an airport or place an airport, they find the foggiest spots, and then that's where the airport is.
Well, they were fighting over that, you know, swampy, foggy spot so bad that they actually buried a ceremonial hatchet. Ceremonial, sorry, I can't speak.
Oh, really?
They buried a real hatchet to say Seattle and Tacoma are done fighting over the airport. They only did this about 20 years ago.
Oh, jeez.
Yep, I guess still
well,
salty about it.
We certainly had the whole state here is aviation history.
Yes,
oh,
it's...
Man, have we made it here.
Yeah, so Washington is incredible.
This
absolutely
is just
incredible.
A piece of it.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I do wish that your grandfather and his team were successful in getting the first flight across. But as you said, his team did help, you know, push the boundaries of flight as we know it in the modern day. So
you could say, would Pangborn have made it if he hadn't tied into some of the things that grandfather had already tried? I really kind of doubt it if he would have made it on his first try.
Yeah, so between the different airplane, we'll call it experiments, crashes, and also figuring out the tailwinds and trade winds and all the engineering behind it and navigating. I feel Pangborn definitely had, not to take away from his accomplishment at all, because it's incredible flying 46 hours across. Like, we both have a little stick time. It's flying is a very tiring thing. People don't realize that. So 46 hours cramped up in a 1930 cockpit. That's...
God, can you imagine in that first plane, that Lockheed?
No. No, I'm lucky. I'm lucky we don't have to experience
it. Sitting in a go-kart for 46 hours at 100 knots.
Cold wind, rain in your face. People, you know, roll up the windows when they feel a drop of drizzle. Like, that's going across the Pacific. I cannot imagine.
Bromley lived until, I think he passed away in 1997.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, wow. That is an incredible lifespan for someone, again, you know, flying planes under bridges and through bonds and across the ocean and surviving all the crashes. Like, wow. Good on him. Mr. Haley, thank you very much again for joining us, as always. This has been Joe Boma for Grit City Stories with another great tale of the Bufflin family's legacy in not only Tacoma, but the world of aviation. Have a great rest of your day.